So Avram, there is Sarah, and Avram weeps over Sarah. And you'll notice that when it says Avram wept over Sarah, there's a small chaf on the Liv Kosa. And that indicates to us that his weeping was balanced. The person is supposed to weep over the deceased, and at the same time, the person is supposed to be balanced. Chazal gave us exact directions, how much 3 days we weep, 7 days we eulogize, and there's Shiva, 30 days for Shloshim, all the laws of Shloshim, bad haircuts, and etc. So the correct amount is a mitzvah. Too little is wrong, and too much is also wrong. As I'll say, there was once a woman who didn't stop weeping. The rabbis told her, stop weeping, or it's not right. And she said, no, I can't contain myself. She kept weeping. Chazal warned her, stop weeping. She didn't stop weeping, and someone else died in her family. Chazal say, if a person weeps too much, what he's saying is, God, I treasure mankind more than you do. And Hashem says, no, I also treasure mankind, and I don't want people to die. I want you to weep over someone that dies, but to a limit. It's interesting that there's a midrash that says, Vayiyu is the gematria, the numerical value of 37. It says, Vayiyu chayei Sarah. Sarah's life was 37 years. Chazal say she only had a child 37 years before she died. And a person who is barren, a person who doesn't have children, it's as though they are dead. That's what we learn from Rachel Imenu. Rachel tells Yaakov, give me children, if not, it's as good as though I were dead. And Yaakov gets upset by that. But Chazal say that Rachel was right in that respect, that a person who has no children, it's as though they are dead. So it's something to think about. Sometimes husbands, when it takes time for a woman to get pregnant, so that's very common. Most people when they get married, especially in frum circles, they expect they'll become pregnant right away. And they don't realize that a very substantial percentage of the population does not get pregnant right away. Most people, I don't know what the most is, but there are tens of percent, it's not 10%, it's maybe 25 or 30%, that do not get pregnant the first year that they're married, even though they want to. And after time, they do. So for the husband, he says, be patient, it'll come. And for the wife, every day is torture. When will it come? I want it already. So we have to remember that even about Sarah Imenu, Chazal say, 37 years she had life. The first 100 years of her life, they were not really life. For a woman to live in this world and not have children is probably the most difficult test. It doesn't say anywhere that that's the most difficult, but it's very, very difficult. So Sarah Imenu passes away, and she passes away at a ripe old age of 127. And that's why when weeping over Sarah, on the one hand, Avram weeps and eulogizes. On the other hand, he has perspective. The woman lived to 127. So we don't go crazy after a person that dies at 127. We do cry, we do eulogize, but we also know the balance and to recognize the good and that the person lived to the ripe old age of 127. Yes? Hanukkah? You mean Sukkot or Pesach, not Hanukkah.
Okay, but on Hanukkah, we can't eulogize,
but they do say Shiva.
Okay, fine. So then, we say
Sukkot or Pesach.
Okay. So we just push everything off the
wow. Right. So it's very difficult. You're right. It's very difficult. Right? That's complex.
Right?
Do the funeral, but you don't eulogize and bury the person, right? It's a very difficult halacha, for sure. Okay. So, Avram now focuses on arranging a shidduch for Yitzchak. Before Avram takes care of his own shidduch, he's focused on taking care of Yitzchak's shidduch. Now, where is Yitzchak in this whole story? So, the simple understanding would be that Yitzchak says, Dad, help me out here. I don't know what to do. And the Torah didn't bother telling us that Yitzchak asked Avram's help. Some say that Yitzchak was recovering from the Akedah. The Medrash says Yitzchak went to Gan Eden for 3 years to recover from the Akedah. And during that period, Avram sent out to get the Shidduch, and he knew that Yitzchak will see her and he'll like her. So Avram goes to search for a Shidduch for Yitzchak. Where does he search? He looks for a girl who comes from his family, from his city. The Medrash says, if you want wheat, take wheat from your own town, because to you they will look nicest. We are accustomed to our territory. So when we look for shiduchim, we have to try and look for someone from our territory. Yes, an Ashkenazi American can make a good match for a Yemenite fresh off the boat. It can happen. I know couples like that where it worked. But it is more likely to work well when they both come from the same background. So those of you who made Aliyah from America, there are plenty of girls who made Aliyah from America. Look for them. Those of you who came from South Africa, there are plenty of girls from South Africa. Look for them. If you can't get exactly from South Africa, so get from North Africa. I'm joking. At least get someone with a similar temperament. Chazal said you should try to go for a girl even from your own town, not only from your own city or from your own land. And if you could get someone who's a distant relative, Chazal said that was very good. That's what Yitzchak did. Avram said, I want this shidduch to work well. Firstly, let me look in my family. So Chazal tell us that Avram knew in his family they had good traits. We see they did achnas sarchem, they did chesed. Avram knew what he wanted. But there's another Chazal that says it wasn't the issue of the midot as much as the issue of familiarity. That Yitzchak should have a shidduch, a girl that has a similar background to his own. So Chazal say that's what every person should look for.
But what about in Britain, really? In this province, it's the same town. It's very.
I didn't hear.
It's very dangerous. What about in Britain? In Britain, it's like insects. It's very dangerous. For example, you know that in the Shihadik it's a higher percentage of some diseases like Pesach, Sakana 1, terrible inborn diseases.
So you're saying. Our geneticist is troubled by this Chazal. It's fitting that you're asking the question. I don't know the answer. Basically, what you're saying is Chazal gave us advice which modern medicine seems to say is less than recommended. I think that this is a question that the big rabbis of the generation have to answer. Meaning, Chazal said you should even take someone from your own family. I know that in our family we have a tradition from a great-great-grandfather that we don't marry in the family. Our great-great-grandfather said, you don't marry your cousins, I don't want any weddings within the family because of this thing. So that's our tradition, okay. But Chazal said that in general it is preferable. Would I recommend it? I don't know. It's a good question. But I think that the stats of within a city, within a town, I think about that we could be more easygoing, but I don't know the statistics. That's a question that really we have to check, let's say in the Hasidic community, where they all intermarry all the time, they're marrying their cousins, or they're all marrying within the same town. Is there really such a higher rate? How much is higher? I know in science it's higher. So halacha decides. That's a halacha question, but you're right. I mean, if it came down to a question of... if it came down to the question of a better statistic or a worse statistic, we have to look into the statistics, because what science calls a significant statistic, halacha doesn't always agree with science on that. So we have to check it out. I don't know the numbers. And even if I knew the numbers, this is a question that's beyond me. I don't know. But it is nonetheless something to consider. Look, you come from Ukraine? Okay, so there are certain norms that you're used to. Even the jokes, even the humor, even the mannerisms of speech. You're used to a certain way of life. And I don't think genetically you have to be so concerned that if you marry a girl from Ukraine, there'll be a problem. You move to Israel, you live in Jerusalem, your kids are going to grow up, so they're going to be kids from Olim Chadashim, who came from Ukraine. I don't think they have to look for someone who are Olim Chadashim from Ukraine, but there is a tendency where kids from Olim Chadashim will understand one another better, and there is an aspect where. Okay. Say that? Yeah, Yecheska.
Well, that's why they have Jordan Yashar. Everybody does that in the States. I don't know if people do it here. You go to the leg testing, and before you go on a date, you call with your mother. She calls with you.
Yeah, the party can they do that? The party can they do that? I think
now before they date.
Okay, yeah.
Is that true? I don't have to worry at all.
Okay.
Isn't that true? That the thing they do before they even go on their first mission, before they go, they make sure that the blood test.
Okay. So Avram wants to send out someone who he could trust. So who does he send out? He sends out his most trusted servant, Eliezer, the son of Nimrod. Nimrod gave him as a gift Eliezer. So who is Eliezer? Really, in the Torah, Eliezer only shows up once. Avram mentions him. He says, "Uven Meshek Beiti, Udamesek Eliezer." The one who was running my house is Eliezer from Damascus. That's the only time Eliezer's name shows up. All the other times, it's tradition. But tradition, yeah. So our tradition is that the servant that he's sending out now is Eliezer. And the one who joined him in the war against Sodom and Amorah was Eliezer. So who is Eliezer? So we have on tradition like this. Eliezer was Zekan Beito, the elder of his house. He was the one who sat by Avram. He was his top disciple. He was the chief student. And he was a big Talmud Chacham. And he learned by Avram, and he looked like Avram. Eliezer looked like Avram. And Eliezer, we'll skip to the end of the story. When he comes back, so Rivka looks out and sees Yitzchak. And when she sees Yitzchak, for some reason she falls off the camel. Different understandings according to Chazal. One understanding is she saw through Ruach HaKodesh that with him she would have Esav. So she said, with him I'm going to have Esav. She fell off the camel. And when she fell off the camel, so she wounded herself. She was no longer a virgin. So the first night, Yitzchak comes and says, wait a second, what happened here? So he asks her, and he says, maybe Eliezer did something wrong. Maybe on your way home with Eliezer, I mean, you're a little girl. You're with an old man. I don't know. So she says, no, come, I'll show you exactly where it happened. I'll show you where I fell off, where I got hurt. They go and they see the signs over there. So he accepts the story. And God says, Eliezer, they suspected you wrongfully. You're coming into Gan Eden alive. Eliezer is one of those that ultimately walks into Gan Eden alive. He's over there alive. Never died. Eliezer just walked into Gan Eden. So Eliezer is a very special person. He was very, very wise. He could understand people just by looking at them. Chazal say there's chokhmat ha-partsuf. There's a wisdom that when you meet people, you could tell things about them without their talking to you. Just by observing people, you could tell what type of people they are. And Eliezer also knew what would be with the Jewish people. He not only had the wisdom of recognizing what type of person Rivka was, but he also had the wisdom of knowing Ruach HaKodesh, what the Jewish people would be all about, because he gives Rivka all these special gifts. The gifts correspond to the Ten Commandments. They correspond to the donations of the Nesiim. They correspond to the two tablets. The gifts he gives Rivka have very special meaning. And Eliezer is wise. He knows the meaning of these things. And he is on such a level that when Avram tells him, I want a wife for Yitzchak, my son, Eliezer says, and I have a daughter. Eliezer was hoping that Avram would take his daughter for Yitzchak, and he had good reason to think that maybe Avram would, because here he is the most faithful servant, the most faithful disciple. He's been learning, trying. He's been doing his best. He walks into Gan Eden alive. Avram didn't walk into Gan Eden alive. Eliezer did. So that's a pretty big source. And Eliezer, the Torah tells us, was Hamoshel Bechol Asher Lo. So the simple reading of Hamoshel Bechol Asher Lo is, he ruled over everything Avram owned. But Chazal tell us that we are supposed to read it as Hamoshel Bechol Asher Lo. Eliezer ruled over everything he owned, meaning Eliezer was like a prophet. He had self-control. He had tremendous self-control. He ruled over every aspect of himself. He wasn't the person who lost his temper. He wasn't the person who lost his cool. He ruled over himself. He was Moshel Bechol Asher Lo. That's the Gibor. Chazal say, Ezu Gibor. Ezu Gibor HaKovesh Titzo, one who conquers himself. And Eliezer was a Gibor, he had conquered himself. So Eliezer was this tremendous Talmud Chacham, and he's hoping that Avram will agree to let Yitzchak marry his daughter. And Avram tells him, I want you to go out and bring a wife for my son from my family. And Eliezer says, okay, and if the girl doesn't agree, so then what then? And Avram says, not then either. Avram sends out to get a shidduch for his son. And here we see one of the responsibilities of a father to work hard to marry off his children. A person is supposed to put in an effort that his children get married. Chazal say a person is supposed to ensure his sons get married. A person is supposed to ensure his daughters get married. If his daughters aren't good looking, he should give him a good dowry. If his daughters are good looking, he still should give him a good dowry. Chazal say a person is supposed to invest in effort to ensure that his children get married. He sees that they're getting older and they don't get married. He should compromise. Help them get a shidduch as best as it can be at that age. They reach the age where, okay, they're goners. They're already old boys and old girls and they have no hope. So he sends them out on Tu B'Av to dance in the vineyards. So that hopefully some guy will like what he sees. That's where he sends his girls. That's where he sends his guys. The average person didn't send his kids dancing in the vineyards to get a shidduch. But that was their solution for the shidduch crisis in the time of the temple. On Tu B'Av, they'd have girls going out to the vineyards dancing. Which girls went there? Well, if your father was a big rabbi, he'd get you a shidduch. If your father was a wealthy person, he'd get you a shidduch. If you had any other hope, you didn't go out to the vineyards. But if you were a girl that you didn't think you had much hope, you'd been trying and you couldn't get a date, so they'd go out to the vineyards and dance, and the guys would go out there, and that was the single scene. That's where they met. So that was for the people who had reached the last straw. But a person's supposed to try and ensure that his children don't reach the last straw. So Avram is going to look for a shidduch for Yitzchak. Now, think about it. Yitzchak's 40 years old. This deserves more learning. How come they waited till he was 40 years old before they looked for a shidduch? What's he been doing until now? So that's a question that needs to be dealt with. So Eliezer goes out to bring a wife for Yitzchak. And he takes a vow that he will keep his word. Why does Avram have to make him promise? Because Avram's an old man. And Avram thinks, maybe I won't be around by the time he comes back. So Avram tells Eliezer, you better know. I'm giving all my wealth to Yitzchak on the condition that he marries a girl the way I'm telling him. If he goes and marries one of these Canaanite girls, that's not for him. If he wants my wealth, then I'm making you promise, you make sure he knows. I expect him to marry a girl from our family. And Eliezer goes out with these 10 camels. And of course, Eliezer puts a muzzle on the camels to ensure that the camels don't touch other people's fields. Now you have to ask yourself, we know that Amoraim, in the Talmud, we have Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair, when his donkey was once stolen, so the thieves spent 3 days trying to get the donkey to eat something and it wouldn't eat anything because their food was, they hadn't taken off the Trumas and Maestras. Their food was prohibited. So for 3 days they're trying to feed the donkey, it wouldn't eat, and it's starving itself to death. So finally they say, what do we need a carcass for? It's going to be dead in a few hours. Let it go. So they let the donkey run, and it runs back home. And when Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair hears its voice, he tells his kids, go feed it. For 3 days now, it hasn't eaten. So that's Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair's donkey. If Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair's donkey wouldn't eat food that was prohibited, how come Avraham Avinu's camels need a muzzle? Good question, no? The Medrash asked the question. So anyways, Avraham's camels were known. Everyone saw Avraham's camels. And they knew that Avram wouldn't let his camels eat from anyone else's fields, even though technically the land was already Avram's. God said, once you have a child, I'm giving you this land. So nonetheless, Avram ensured his camels were muzzled. They don't touch anyone else's fields. And Eliezer comes out there and he does a nachash. What's a nachash? Nachash is a sorcery suspicion. He says, I'm here and the girls are coming out. No one's here to tell them how to behave. They're not by their mother's apron strings. And when the girls come out of the city, so we'll see how they behave. Then we'll see if they're nice. You know, you come to someone's house and you ask for a drink. Of course, the girls are going to be nice. Sure, here, I'll give you a drink. But when they're out in the middle of work, they're going to draw the water. They have to get back home with these buckets. You're a stranger who just showed up to town. It's very plausible that even a girl that, by her parents, is going to behave nicely, when she's out there and she's busy doing her work, she'll say, sorry, I don't have time now. Catch you later. Fetch your own water. So Eliezer waits by the well and he says, I want to see the girl who not only offers me a drink, when I ask her for a drink, she agrees to give me a drink and even draws water for my camels. And here we see the trait of chesed for a stranger. A stranger who really you don't owe anything to. And even for his animals. So that's something to think about. What chesed we're looking for. We say one of the traits of the Jews are gomlei chasadim. Eliezer knows that in order to fit into Avram's family, she has to not only offer him a drink, she has to offer the camels a drink. What does the Torah tell us? Natati esev b'sadcha, I will give grass in your fields. I will give food for your animals and for you. From here we derive, before you sit down to eat, you have to give them animals to eat. If you have animals outside that are hungry, before you sit down to eat, make sure they got their food. So Eliezer is there by the well, and he says, God, give me a sign. I'm going to ask the girl to drink. If she agrees to give me and the camels, good. Now, you have to ask yourself, maybe she's a mamzeres. Maybe she comes from an illegitimate marriage. Her father, her mother cheated on her father. Is that a girl that's fitting for Yitzhak? How would he know? Maybe she's a nice girl, but she's illegitimate. Maybe she's a nice girl, but she's from a Canaanite that moved out to Haran. How would Eliezer know? Eliezer says, I'll ask her for a drink, and if she's a kind girl, then she's the one. Who said? Hey, Avram had given him another condition. He had said, what? So Chazal say Eliezer asked improperly. Even though Eliezer asked for a sign, God gave him what he asked for. But his request was improper. He is one of those that Chazal say asked improperly. So the girl comes out, and we know the rest of the story, right? She gives him the drink. She finishes to give him the drink. She pours out the remainder of the water and goes and gives the camels more to drink. And when he sees that she's lived up to his expectations, he gives her the gifts and asks her what family she's from. And she says she's from the family of Nahor, which is Avram's brother. And Eliezer comes to Rivka's family. And we all know the Medrash that they put poison in the soup. They wanted to kill him and take his wealth. And the Malach came and switched the bowls, and her father drank the bowl with the poison, and her father dropped dead. And that's why at the end of the story her father isn't around. The one who's running the show is her brother, because that night her father croaked. I mean, he drank the poison that he had put in Eliezer's soup. The Malach came and switched the bowls. Eliezer says, I gotta go. And they say, well, she's still young. And Eliezer says, don't detain me. God made me succeed. You don't get in my way. So what does Eliezer say? They say a logical claim. What does he answer them? Right? What do they say? They say, let her stick around. Let her prepare. She's getting married. What do you mean just taking her off like that? You come yesterday, you're leaving today. What does Eliezer say? Don't detain me. God made me successful. Let me go. What kind of answer is that? So God made you successful. Stick around for 10 months. What's the rush? She's a little girl. You come in yesterday, you want to leave today? That's the way you want to make a shidduch? So I always thought that sometimes it's good to be hard-headed. That we learn from Eliezer that sometimes you have to be hard-headed. A guy comes to you and says, how are you going to go to Mincha now? It's raining. Don't detain me. I got to be at Mincha now. Sometimes there are people that they have their principles, and when you try talking them logic doesn't penetrate. And they say, but these are my principles, and that's just the way it's going to be. And that's the way I understand Eliezer's answer. It's my own shot, but I think it's true. Eliezer says, God made me successful. Don't get in my way. So they could have answered him, what do you mean? We're not getting in your way. We're telling you something very logical. Let the girl get prepared. Let us prepare a dowry for her. We'll send her with what she needs. Let us get acclimated to the idea. Eliezer isn't interested. Sometimes in life, the fact that you're willing to enter conversation shows that you're willing to bargain. And the answer has to be, this is what I'm doing. You want it, take it. You don't want it, leave it. This is the way it's going to be. I once had to rent someone's apartment for them. So I checked out the market. I checked out the price. I came up with the fair price. Not too expensive, not too cheap, a fair price. Tenant comes in, looks at the apartment, and starts bargaining with me. I said, do me a favor. Don't take the apartment. The price is fair. There'll be 10 people who want the apartment. You want it? This is the price. You don't want it? Leave it. I'm not bargaining. The guy took the apartment. Why? Because I knew it was a fair price. If you enter a discussion, then you're already, well, it's a fair price. No, it's not a fair price. I'm not discussing it. This is the price. You want to take it? You don't want to leave it. I'm not bargaining. Eliezer tells them, this is God made me succeed. Why are you getting in my way? This is going to work. The shidduch is going to work. Everything makes sense. Give me the girl and let me go. He doesn't answer their claim. What do they say? Let the girl get prepared. He doesn't tell them, well, Elia, we have everything she needs back home. That once you enter the conversation, they'll say, no, she needs this, she needs that. Sometimes it's better not to enter the conversation, to go from above. You got to understand me. From my perspective, this is ready to go. I want to go. He doesn't enter their ballpark. He stays in his ballpark and says, no, I'm going. Give me the girl and let me go. So they say, we'll ask her. He doesn't answer that claim. Doesn't say he agreed to that. They made their claim, and he's standing around. He hasn't answered them. They call Rivka, and they ask her, do you want to go with this man? Notice, suddenly, they're making him into this stranger. And she says, I will go. Whether you guys like it or not, I'm going. This is right, I'm going. So they send her, and they bless her. And from here, we have the custom that the kala gets blessed before she goes to get married. The ancient custom used to be that the rabbis would come and bless the kala. When the rabbis would do the badekin, and they would bless her. Our custom today is that the chasen does the badekin, and her parents bless her. The Yekish custom is that both parents bless the kala. There's another custom here. Skip, there was one more point. Just a second. Don't remember. Okay. Okay, so they go, and Rivka and her lads follow the man. And that is a way of modesty, that a girl does not go up a ladder before a man, and she doesn't ride on a donkey before a man, and she doesn't walk before a man. He shouldn't have his eyes on her. So a modest person doesn't walk purposely behind a woman, and a modest girl doesn't walk purposely in front of a man. Obviously, if you're in a public domain, so then you have no control. People are always walking in front of you. But the idea is, if we're going to walk together, then a modest person does not walk behind a woman. And this applies even to one's own wife and one's own daughter. A person is supposed to act modestly with every woman, and that includes even the people of his family. They're on their way back, and Yitzchak goes out in the afternoon to pray. We know that Yitzchak composed the afternoon prayer of Mincha, right? So Horayim is Yitzchak's prayer. Avram composed the prayer of Boker. The second letter in Avram's bays, Avraham Boker. Yitzchak, So Horayim. Yaakov, Erev. Each one composed the prayer that's the second letter of their name. So they all prayed all three prayers. But the one that's attributed to them, Yitzchak goes out in the afternoon to pray. And Yitzchak is really on his way back while his father was working on his shidduch. Yitzchak went to work on his father's shidduch. Now there was this famous girl named Hagar. She was the daughter of the greatest king of that time, the Egyptian king. And everyone's been chasing after her, trying to get a shidduch with her. She's been distanced from her husband for 30 some odd years now. And for 30 some odd years now, people keep chasing after her, trying to get her to agree to marry them. And she's not interested. And the greatest kings and princes have been trying to marry her. And she keeps herself all tied up. She says, I'm waiting for Avram to take me back. And she's been waiting. Chazal say that's why here she's given another name of Ketura, like Ketores. She had good smell, like Kesher. Ketura is like Keshura. She kept herself tied up for Avram. And while Avram is busy arranging a shidduch for Yitzchak, Yitzchak goes out and arranges the shidduch for his father. Yitzchak goes out to bring Hagar back. And Hagar has been staying by that well where the angel appeared to her, the Er Lachai Roi, and that well really corresponds to her prayer. She says, you, the living God, you see my affliction. You see that I've been chased out of my husband's house. You see that I'm waiting for him, and let me come back. Hagar is on a tremendous level, and she merits to be taken back. She's going to spend another 30 some odd years with Avram and bring many, many children to the world. And bring many nations to the world. So Yitzchak goes and brings Hagar back. And now they're both going to get remarried, Avram and Yitzchak. And Yitzchak goes out now in the evening. He goes out to pray. According to some, he was on his way back to the Har HaMoriah, where the Akedah had taken place. And that's where he went to pray. And he looks out and he sees camels. Rivka sees a person praying. And Rivka says that must be either Avram or Yitzchak. So she asks the servant, who is that man walking in the field towards us? I see him walking through a field. He's obviously coming towards us. And the servant says, that's my master. That's the new boss. That's that's Avram's son. And so she covers herself with a kerchief, and this is the source for the custom that the kala gets covered before the wedding. And the slave comes up and he tells Yitzchak about what a wonderful girl he brought her, and that's the job of a shadchan. When he comes to the girl's side, he tells them the whole story about what a great family he's offering them. He tells them all about Avram and the family and how well Avram is doing and what kind of kindness they do. And now that he comes to Yitzchak, so before he shows him the girl, he's already agreed that she's going to marry him. He's been given the authority to do that, power of attorney. But before he brings her to Yitzchak, he takes Yitzchak aside and he starts telling him, I want you to know what kind of girl I brought you. And after he tells Yitzchak everything, Yitzchak takes her and brings her to the tent of Sarah, his mother. He doesn't have his own tent. He has to bring her to Sarah's tent. So Chazal say, from here we learn that when an orphan gets married, his mother comes to the wedding. The parents of a child, if the parents are deceased, their neshama comes to see the child rejoice at the wedding. So when the verse says he brought her to the tent of Sarah, his mother, it means that he brought her to the tent, he took her to be married, and the spirit, the neshama of his mother Sarah, came to see her son happy. And after he married her and he lived with her, he loved her. Our sages say from here we derive that a person shouldn't expect that love comes before marriage. Sometimes love only comes after marriage. It doesn't say he loved Rivka before he married her. How could he love her? He just met her that day. So he took her into the tent. They start living as husband and wife. And then she grows on him and he loves her. Chazal say that a girl that a person marries with time becomes a part of him. And the love grows after marriage. Just like by Yitzchak. The love, we think we have love before marriage. We have all kinds of things, but we don't have love. Love develops when each one gives to the other and the relationship grows. Like we see here, Yitzchak brought her in and then says he loved her. Yes?
Wasn't she still a little girl?
Wasn't she still a little girl?
Wait a few years,
so, there are different opinions in Chazal. One opinion says she was 14. One opinion says she was 3. But if she was 3, it's a little bit unusual that a 3-year-old can draw water for 10 camels. I mean, you know how much water camels drink? So, if she was 3, which is the known medrash, then she was an exceptional 3-year-old. I mean, there are kids. I know kids today who at 1.5 are reading. That's unusual. I know today. I can tell you're in the neighborhood. How old was Cleopatra? How old is Cleopatra? There was a world war over this woman. How old is she? I don't remember if 12 or 14. World war over Cleopatra. So, that's a good question. It deserves its own discussion. If you want, how's your Hebrew? About 2 weeks ago, I gave a shiur on that in Hebrew. So I could send you the link. But it deserves its own discussion, how he married her at 3. Okay, let's continue. So, Rivka fell off the camel and wounded herself. And God sent a deer to cover her blood. And in the merit that the deer was the representative who came to cover her blood, in that merit, the deer, Ayal, Utzviv, Yachmuv, Akov, Dishon, Utov, Azamer, the 7 wild animals, they, when we shech them, we cover their blood. And it says Yitzchak was comforted after his mother. After a person gets married, his love goes from his parents to his wife. And that is the normal procession of emotions in marriage. If a person is married and they're still tied to their parents' home, they have to work on themselves. This I say to the men. This is also true for the women. Only it takes time for the women's emotions to evolve. An intelligent husband won't compete with her emotional bond to her parents. But an intelligent wife will work to build her bond with her husband and distance herself from her parents. This is difficult for a wife, so play this class for her. So she knows that that's part of her job. It's not easy. It's her job. It's not his job. They could talk about it. He could help her recognize that that's part of what she has to do to build the marriage. But he can't do it for her, because then he becomes competition between her parents and him. He can't do that for her. That's a woman's job, just like it's a man's job. And if we behave normally, then it should happen on its own. So Avram marries Keturah. And Keturah, we said she's Hagar. And Keturah brings him many children. Zimron, Yokshan, Medon, Midian, all the Midianites, Yishbak, Shuach. And we have the involvement of these different families. And before Avram passes away, he sends them off. He doesn't want to leave competition for Yitzchak. They are not the inheritors. Yitzchak is the one that's continuing his path, and therefore he sends them off and he gives them gifts. He doesn't send them off barren. Now, there are all kinds of pshatim in their names, but I don't think that's so important for us right now. The pasuk tells us over here that Avram had children from his pilagshim. And here there are different opinions among Chazal whether he had more than one wife or not. There's an important machlokas Rashi Ramban over here. What is a pilegesh? So pilegesh is short for plag isha, half a woman. She's not really his wife. Plag isha, half a wife, is a pilegesh. Now Rashi says that a wife, you give a ksuba to. You write a contract, what you owe her. A pilegesh, you have kiddushin, you have legal engagement, but there is no ksuba. The Ramban says that the correct version is that a pilegesh has no ksuba, nor does she have kiddushin, because the term pilegesh shows up in the Torah, and the whole concept of a ksuba is not biblical, so it cannot be that the difference between a wife and a pilegesh is whether she gets a ksuba, because a ksuba is a biblical concept, and a ksuba is not a biblical concept. The rabbis instituted a ksuba to give extra protection to the woman. But if the Torah says that there are two forms of relationship between a man and a woman, a wife and a pilegesh, so then the difference between them must be a biblical one, because the concept appears in the Torah. So what's the biblical difference? The Ramban says a wife one does kiddushin with, and a pilegesh one does not. That's what the Ramban says. There's more to say about that. That's how they usually translate it. I don't know what concubine means. I don't know. I just know it's a translation of pilegesh, but I don't know what it means, the exact definition of a concubine. So I don't know. That's how they translate it usually, yeah. So if they don't have kiddushin, that means that he doesn't give her a marriage contract or he doesn't give her a ring, but rather they agree they're going to live together. It's an agreement that they're going to live together as husband and wife, and then if one of them wants to break the relationship, they can. Her children don't inherit him. So that's why Avram gives them all the gifts. He says, legally, you don't inherit me. You're not my... I didn't marry your mother. She's my pilegesh. You'll notice that in the Torah it says he took a wife, Keturah. But if you open Divrei Hayamim, if you open Chronicles, over there it says that Keturah was his pilegesh. So the concept is that he gave them rights, even though they weren't supposed to inherit him. So he gave them a lot of gifts. Some say that really he wrote her ksuba, but she's called a pilegesh because she was from a family of slaves. She was the daughter of the king of Egypt. The king of Egypt was the son of Ham, and Ham was cursed to be a slave. So that's why she's called a pilegesh. Then we run into the question, how come Avram was willing to marry Knanis? But for Yitzchak, his son, he demands it be a girl who's not a Knanis. And the simple understanding is that Avram already had his continuation with Yitzchak. Now there are different spiritual purposes for remarrying. Our sages say a person should never remain single. Even if he's an old man, he should remarry. The Chafetz Chaim thought that he was over with and he didn't want to remarry, and his children convinced him to remarry. They told him, no, who knows how many years you have left to live. And he lived a very, very long life. He outlived his second wife. And his children write that he thanked them. In the end of his life, he thanked them for pushing him to get a second wife. Oh, yeah? I didn't know that. So the Chafetz Chaim remarried, and he really thanked them for that. So Chazal say, just like Avram remarried when he was an old man, every person should try to live in communion. A person is not supposed to live a lonely life, even if he's an old man. Avram died, it said, Zaken visavea, satiated. So one understanding is that shows the kindness that God does with the tzaddikim, that they get satiated in their old age. And another understanding is that this shows Avram's level, that Avram was satiated. Most of us, as much as God gives us, we're not satiated. There's always one more thing we want, at least. Chazal say, "En adam met v'chatzit tavato biyado." Person doesn't die with the feeling that he's accomplished even half what he'd like to accomplish when it comes to the material world. So the tzaddikim are not that way. Avram died, he was savea, he was satiated. There's a beautiful medrash here that says that how does God make the tzaddikim pass away? He shows them what they're going to have in the world to come, and then they're satiated, and that's how they pass away. And so Avram passed away happy, satiated, and his children Yitzchak and Yishmael bury him. Yishmael did tshuva, and perhaps that is why we find Tanoim who were named Rabbi Yishmael, because Yishmael in the end of his life did tshuva. He came back. Shabbat Shalom.